eyes, a destination, and a journey to some end result. Kriya Yoga is based on physiology, psychology, philosophy, astrology, and the direct experience of these realized masters. Kriya Yoga is a path that is guided by these realized masters, which I will get into a bit, and their guidance is part of the reason that this practice is so powerful and so transformational. But we start with the ideas, why would we come to something like this? Why would we have any interest in sitting with our eyes closed? What kind of benefit would we hope to get from something like this? Obviously, we have some kind of interest, some kind of longing. Something has brought us here. That there's something that we think that obviously will help us in our life in some way, to give us something, because everybody has some reason to do something. Well, Kriya Yoga promises, in my personal experience, and the experience of many, promises the simultaneous development of body, mind, intellect, with spiritual transformation. Kriya Yoga is a complete yoga that works, is all-encompassing. It implies karma yoga, the yoga of the hands, jnana yoga, the yoga of the mind, and bhakti yoga, the yoga of the heart. In Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, which is the foremost treatise on yoga that I've been told was written approximately 5,000 years ago, it speaks of yoga. I have heard that they say that there are 108 different types of yoga. If we go on the internet these days and Google yoga, we'll come up with all kinds of yoga. But in this treatise of Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, he only mentions one yoga, and the yoga that he mentions is Kriya Yoga. And he has Tapaha Swadhyaya Ishvara Pranadani Kriya Yoga. So, tapas or karma yoga, austerity, self-discipline, the practice of meditation, along with swadhyaya, which is typically interpreted as a study of the scriptures, but more metaphorically, it's the study of the self, and Ishvara Pranadani, surrender and love for God, these three encompass this practice of Kriya Yoga. But Kriya Yoga promises the all-round development of body, mind, intellect, and spiritual transformation. So I'd like to start off reading something that is kind of profound and really speaks to what this practice can give to us. This is an article I got off from the internet called The Benefits of Meditation that is profound. It starts off saying, it's a piece of advice yogis have known for thousands of years. Take a deep breath and relax, and watch the tension melt from your muscles and all your worries vanish. Somehow we all know that relaxation is good for us. Now the hard science has caught up. A comprehensive scientific study showing that deep relaxation changes our bodies on a genetic level has just been published. What researchers at Harvard Medical School discovered is that in long-term practitioners of relaxation methods such as yoga and meditation, far more disease-fighting genes were active compared to those who practice no form of relaxation. We live in a miracle, this body. And the building block of this body is in our DNA. Every cell in our body has this strand of DNA, which I've read. I'm no expert. I know a little bit about it, so I'll share, but I want to let you know that my base of knowledge is pretty superficial. that if you were to stretch it out, it would stretch out to be about 6 feet long. I've heard that there are between 20 and 20,000 genes on a strand of DNA. Well, these genes turn on and they turn off. And the ones that are turned on, basically the structure of which ones turn on and turn off, determine what kind of cells different types of cells are. A liver cell is different from a brain cell, which is different from a bone cell, etc. These different cells also turn on and turn off given the nature of our life and lifestyle. And this is what they have now found here. Through the researching of the human genome, they call it, it's really profound beyond imagination when we think that when the sperm unites with the ovum, with the egg, at that minute when there's that first cell, in that first cell is the DNA strand that will start to multiply and have all the genetic information that becomes us, that will determine how tall we will be, the color of our eyes, how we will age, our body weight, our body type, everything. The intelligence in this DNA is beyond imagination. We live in a miracle and we tend to forget it, what's going on in this. Plus, in the DNA is also our hereditary information comes forward. Whereas 100,000 years ago, some ancestor of ours faced an invasion of some virus or some bacteria and came up with an antibody that protects us, is now carried in our DNA as well. There's kind of an interesting show on PBS with this Dr. Lewis Gates, who follows the genetic ancestry of people, and through the studying of this DNA, they can go back thousands, hundred thousands of years, and our history, where we came from, is all encoded in this DNA. So I only share this with you because it's beyond imagination, and we tend to forget this miracle that we are living in, this body. I'm told there's, and again, something like 3 trillion cells. Each cell, we are told, is conscious. Each cell communicates with other cells in this miracle in which we're living, and we tend to take it for granted. This human body is precious, and a human body is, well, I'll get to it, is extremely rare in the universe, the yogis teach. However, to get back to Harvard Medical School here, it says here again, far more disease-fighting genes were active compared to those who practice no form of meditation. In particular, they found genes that protect from disorders such as pain, infertility, this comes up quite a bit, high blood pressure, and rheumatoid arthritis were switched on. The changes, say researchers, were induced by what they call the relaxation effect, a phenomena that could be just as powerful as any medical drug, but without the side effects. We found a range of disease-fighting genes were active in relaxation practitioners that were not active in the control group, said the professor who led the study. The good news for the control group with the less healthy genes is that the research didn't stop there. The experiment, which showed just how responsive genes are to behavior, mood, and environment, revealed that genes can switch on just as easily as they can switch off. Harvard researchers asked the control group to start practicing relaxation methods every day. After 2 months, their bodies began to change. The genes that help fight inflammation, kill disease cells, and protect the body from cancer all began to switch on. More encouraging still, the benefits of the relaxation effect were found to increase with regular practice. The more people practiced relaxation methods, such as meditation or deep breathing, the greater their chances of remaining free of arthritis, and joint pain with stronger immunity, healthier hormone levels, and lower blood pressure. Benson believes the research is pivotal because it shows how a person's state of mind affects the body on a physical and genetic level. It might also explain why relaxation induced by meditation or mantra is considered to be a powerful remedy in traditions such as Ayurveda in India and Tibetan medicine. But just how can relaxation have such wide-ranging and powerful effects? Research has described the negative effects of stress on the body, linked to the release of stress hormones, adrenaline, and cortisol. Stress rises the heart rate and blood pressure, weakens immunity, and lowers fertility. And we all know that we're told that the nature of the food we eat, particularly if we eat a lot of meat, we're taking in a lot of adrenaline as well, because of the nature of the way the animals are killed. Okay, so these hormones, these toxic hormones, are coming into our system, and the nature of the world we live in these days is creating more of it. By contrast, the state of relaxation is linked to higher levels of feel-good chemicals such as serotonin and to the growth hormone which repairs cells and tissue. Indeed, studies show that relaxation has virtually the opposite effect, lowering heart rate, boosting immunity, and enabling the body to thrive. On a biological level, stress is linked to fight, flight, and danger. In survival mode, heart rate rises and blood pressure shoots up. Meanwhile, muscles preparing for danger contract and tighten, and non-essential functions such as immunity and digestion go by the wayside. Relaxation, on the other hand, is a state of rest, enjoyment, and physical renewal. Free of danger, muscles can relax and food can be digested. The heart can slow and blood circulation flows freely to the body tissues, feeding it with nutrients and oxygen. This restful state is good for fertility, as the body is able to conserve the resources it needs to generate new life. While relaxation techniques can be very different, their biological effects are essentially similar. When you relax, the parasympathetic nervous system switches on. That is linked to better digestion, memory, and immunity, among other things. As long as you relax deeply, you'll reap the rewards. But, he warns, deep relaxation isn't the sort of switching off you do relaxing with a cup of tea and lounging on the sofa. What you're looking for is a state of deep relaxation where tension is released from the body on a physical level and your mind completely switches off. The effect won't be achieved by lounging around in an everyday way, nor can you force yourself to relax. You can only really achieve it by learning a specific technique such as meditation. The relaxation, however, may not be as pronounced on everyone. Some people are more susceptible to relaxation methods than others, says this doctor at the Boston Medical Center. Through relaxation, we find that some experience little improvement, others a lot, and there are a few whose lives are totally turned around. And we see that as well. Typically, what is the key ingredient is that some people do it with more sincerity and more regularity, and that's the key. So getting back to the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. The second Yoga Sutra is Yoga Chitta Vritti Nirodha. Yoga is the cessation, the stopping of the thought waves in the mind. One of the important premises of yoga is this idea. Yoga has many different meanings. It actually has 32 different meanings. But four of them are really important for us to know, because this one sutra, in a nutshell, kind of gives the whole of yoga. The yoga is, first in the first definition, it's a discipline.
Excuse me.
Yoga is a way of doing something. When we drive a car, it's a yoga, because you have to do it correctly. When you cook food, whatever you do, there's a discipline, a technique, a proper way of doing it. The second, it says yoga is the cessation of the thought waves in the mind. This is the practice of yoga, is learning to control the mind, which ultimately leads to the highest, and that's meditation. Okay, meditation is something that can be a little confusing. Later in the Yoga Sutras, he talks about Ashtanga Yoga, and he talks about that the last three steps are dharana, which is concentration, dhyana, meditation, to samadhi. So dharana is concentration, which means normal thought is many thoughts coming constantly. The mind is a constant flow of thoughts. So what we're doing is we're taking this constant flow of thoughts and reducing it to one thought for a longer period of time, which is concentration. From that, then, we go to meditation, which is a state of no thought. And real meditation isn't so much a technique as an achievement that then will ultimately lead to samadhi. And samadhi is the state where, I'll explain in a minute, where the spiritual practitioner merges back into the absolute, into the source, which is really which is the ultimate goal of yoga. So then, in how is this accomplished? And in Sutra 12 of Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, he writes, Abhyasa Varagyabhyam Tan Nirodaha. The way that we bring about the cessation of the thought waves of the mind, Nirodaha means stopping, is through practice and detachment. And practice, goes on to say, is that effort put toward the stopping of the thought waves of the mind is practice. And it must be done with sincere effort over a long, sustained period of time. And the reason that many people say, I've meditated for years, but I haven't made a lot of practice, is because the practice itself is not consistent. And then there's detachment and vairagya. And vairagya is this idea of detachment is a very beautiful concept. In Tattva Bodha by Adi Shankaracharya, he says that vairagya is the absence of desire for the fruit of our actions here and hereafter. It means the basic job of the mind is to desire things. It wants to go out. And when it does, it immediately has a tendency to judge. Every desire comes with typically an expectation, and then we immediately judge, do we like it or do we not like it? Detachment is the ability to just let things come without attachment. When there's no attachment, then we're not creating more karma. So, this practice then must be done over a long period of time, sustained period of time, with sincerity and detachment. This is the practice of yoga, and this is what they're talking to here. In order for, when Kriya Yoga says it brings about simultaneous development, it does. And how does it do it? It does it through a state of deep relaxation. How is this deep relaxation attained? Well, we work extensively with the breath. Primarily the long, slow, deep breath is key. And this, one of the primary principles as taught by our master, Paramahamsa Pragyananda, is that mind controls the senses and breath controls the mind. That breath mastery is self mastery. And we use the analogy of deep sleep. When we're in a state of deep sleep, we have no sense of the world, and the body is completely calm and relaxed. In fact, there is, in deep sleep, there is no thought at all. Sleep is a thought. It's hard to articulate. Again, this is in Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. They call it nidra. That it's the thought of no thought, which is kind of hard to explain. But it's also when only the causal body is at play. The physical body, the gross body, is completely at rest. The astral body, which is primarily the mind, is at rest. All that's at play is the causal body. And the causal body, the nature of the causal body is, again from Tattva Bodha, he says, the nature of the causal body, he says, is inexplicable. It can't be explained. Beginningless. Of the nature of ignorance, the sole cause of our astral and physical body, of the nature of ignorant of its own true nature beyond duality, is the causal body. Causal body is very profound. The yogis teach, our masters teach, that it's our knowledge and ignorance body. So when we are in the state of sleep, this closest to the soul, that which surrounds the soul, there are three bodies. That which is closest to it is the causal body. We could liken it to our deepest subconscious. But it is tamasic in nature, which means it has the veiling power, which is the veiling power of Maya. Maya, which is the force that brings forth creation, has two aspects. It has the veiling power, and it has the projecting power. Anyway, this state that we go to in deep sleep is the state we all aspire to through meditation, deep meditation. But in deep sleep, we go to it, so we know how to get there, except that there's this one blanketing, veiling thought. So we are there, but we are completely unconscious. When you're in that state, somebody could saw off your leg and you wouldn't know it. You're just so dead to the world, right? The world does not exist. But my point is, how do we get to that state? We get to that state through long, slow, deep breathing, which is why in our practice, the practice of Kriya Pranayama, we do this because it brings deep, deep calmness through decarbonizing the blood and oxygenizing it so that there is less need to breathe. And when there's less need to breathe, then as is the breath, so is the mind. Then the mind becomes completely calm. Lama says a very beautiful thing I'll share with you. He talks about creation. He says that he says God is constantly giving us thoughts and we are puzzled. These are the thoughts that rise in the mind. He says these thoughts are the impressions of the millions of our former actions. He says whatever we have done, good or bad, leaves an impression. This impression is stored in the causal body and transmigrates with us from life to life. He said it is the aggregate balance sheet of our past karma. He said, as a result of this, he says, our brains, each of our brains is different. He says, this explains the diversity in creation. He said, God is not partial, making one person intelligent and beautiful and another person simple-minded and not attractive. He said, our brains are different, implying our whole being is different because our karma is different. And our karma is based on this aggregate balance sheet of all the actions of our prior birth. And all these seeds, they're called samskaras, are stored in the causal body. And they're what's called the karmasya. Any thought, anything we've ever thought, anything we've ever said, any action we've ever done, creates an impression, and it's called a samsara. And these samskaras are stored in the causal body and travel with us from life to life. Which is very interesting, because the implication of that is the mind is much older than the body. This body is unique to this incarnation, but this mind we have brought forward with us from life to life. And Lauren and I were talking about this today. The yogis use the analogy of a lake. That each one of these, think of this lake as the lake of our subconscious. Going from our subconscious to the surface of the lake being our conscious mind. These, we could say that these are the modifications that of the citta, this mind stuff. That each one of these samskaras forms these seeds, and then you can imagine these seeds dropping to the bottom of this lake. Well, in the bottom, it starts to form patterns as the results of similar samskaras. So somebody that has a nasty disposition, that has anger issues, well, because of the accumulated, constant, ongoing nature of these samskaras, they build up these dunes, if you will, in the collective karma. Somebody that's always benevolent, loving, good sense of humor, they have built up that karma. These seeds then come to the surface, and also our natural tendencies are then what are formed, which brings forth this incarnation. This whole idea of incarnation too is very beautiful, because the yogis teach, and Baba talks about this in his Kriya Yoga book, that our incarnation of this birth is determined by the last thoughts of our last birth at the time of death, if it's a normal death. And what these last thoughts are predicated is on the predominant desires of our incarnation. None of this is random. At that time, before we leave this incarnation, and in the Lord Krishna talks about this in the Bhagavad Gita, they also talk about this in Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, which I keep referencing because it's such a profound treatise. And it says, before we leave the body, what is determined is our species, because we aren't necessarily guaranteed a human birth. Our gender, how long we will live, how we will die, the context of our incarnation, whether we are going to be born really rich or really poor or middle class. Yoganandaji said, if we die, if before we die, we have the desire for curry potatoes, we'll be born in India. If we have the desire for strawberry shortcake, we'll be born in America. So these desires are profound, because it determines where we are going. So where was I with this? Okay. So it gives the context of our birth, and it also gives certain types of karmas will come to fruition in this incarnation. It's built into the blueprint. It's called our prarabdha karma. There are different types of karma. There's samchita karma. This is this karma of these accumulated karma. Kriyamana karma is the karma we are generating now. All of us coming here tonight with some kind of interest to talk about these types of things of a spiritual nature is a type of karma. And the third type is called this Prarabdha Karma. And Prarabdha Karma is likened to an arrow that has left the bow. It's in the air and there's nothing we can do about it. And part of this is there are things that are going to happen to us in this incarnation, whether we like it or not. There's no escaping it. Some could be very good, some could be negative, whatever it is. Okay? So, we leave the body at the time of death, and we go, there are different realms. There are heavenly realms, and there are negative realms as well, depending on the nature of our incarnation. So let's say we've been good, so we go to a heavenly realm. We are there until the fruits of our good karma of this incarnation have fructified, have worked out. Then, at that time, Baba talks about when the stars and planets are aligned with our Prarabdha Karma, at that point then, we will enter the womb of the mother, and when that time is appropriate, because it really kicks in with our first breath, then the incarnation begins. And what our astrology is, fascinatingly, it's like this cosmic kind of time code, that our Prarabdha Karma, that certain things are going to manifest as by turned on as when certain signs in our chart come to pass. Quite profound. So where I'm trying to think where I go. Okay. So then, we're in the womb. This is very beautiful as well, because the yogis teach that in the womb, we have the full awareness of our situation, that we remember who we are, where we are, and the purpose of our incarnation. And some yogis actually never lose consciousness from being born. But they say that while we're in the womb, we're basking in the light of the soul, and we're praying to God, "Oh God, oh God, this time I will not forget you, I will not forget you." And then what happens? The time of birth comes, and we're brought out, typically through the birth canal. We've been in this amniotic fluid where we've been floating, we've been fed by the mother, it's warm, it's comfortable, if we're in a nice womb. And then we come out and we take the first breath, and the first breath apparently is the most important breath we will ever take, because we go like this and it opens the lungs, there's pressure in the lungs and it cleans up, and then the baby has to start breathing on its own. The heart then starts to kick in even more so. We have to deal with the effects of gravity because we've been in the womb, and our first breath, this breath is called Vaishnava prana, and for most of us it then wipes away this memory that we had in the womb, and most of us are here back again not knowing where we are or who we are again. We have to deal with gravity, we have to learn to suckle, we have to learn to drink, breathe, all that. And here we are once again having forgotten who we really are, and this begins our condition. So there's another beautiful analogy that I'll talk about. Then I'll talk a little bit more about, oh my God, Kriya Yoga specific. Imagine the sun shining into a bucket of water and assuming a small identity as the reflection in the water. Okay? Now that reflection is now conditioned by the size and shape of the bucket and the state of the water. If that reflection forgets its real nature of the seemingly infinite light of the sun, it would feel bound by the bucket. If, however, it realizes that it is this infinite light itself, then it would play in this bucket unaffected. They say, similarly, truth, God, the absolute, whatever word we tried to label, is shining in the bucket of the gross body and the waters of the astral body, the subtle body. Having forgotten who we really are, we have identified with the body and the mind, feel ourselves to be a separate identity, and then assume that every other identity is different from us and God is far away. They say this vision, born of ignorance of our true nature, has been with us life after life after life after life. And it is so deeply rooted that even when we are told who and what we are, we can't accept it. This is our condition. They go on to say, every being, certainly us in particular, wants to feel complete. Because we don't, at some level, there's a dissatisfaction, an incompleteness that we can't quite put our finger on. We want to be happy, and we want to live forever. Desire for this fulfillment gives rise to action. Action then gives rise to, the action is either enjoyed or suffered, which creates these impressions, which give rise to further desires, which gives rise to action. And it's this wheel that we are on that has given rise to countless births. And it's this wheel of desire that perpetuates it. And the yogis teach this would all stop if and when we realize we are what we seek. And this journey to determine who we are and the realization of this truth is the realm of yoga. We go from essentially animality to humanity to divinity, from instinct, rationality, to intuition. So the journey, very briefly, I'll just share this with you because I find this beyond imagination. Sri Aurobindo, who was a great saint of India, and this is published in Baba's book, Kriya Yoga, talks about the whole play of creation, the whole purpose and play of creation. He says that creation is the self-expression of the absolute that has playfully plunged itself into apparent sleep in order to enjoy the delight of self-discovery as it ascends back to itself through the successive stages of evolution. Creation is the self-expression of the absolute. What is the absolute? Sat, Chit, Ananda. Existence, which always is, always was, always will be, beyond time and space. Existence of what? Consciousness. Pure consciousness. And this pure consciousness is bliss. Baba talks about God was one and he desired to be many. So from this one absolute Brahman, he transformed himself into relative existence and manifested this whole universe of names and forms. So the absolute self-expression of the absolute God is both the efficient cause and the material cause. That ultimately the yogis teach everything is God. This whole creation is the play of consciousness that has playfully plunged itself into apparent sleep through this veiling power of Maya. This little reflection that we are in the bucket of this gross body has forgotten its real nature. Why? Because when we remember, the game is up. There's no more game. Why? In order to enjoy the delight of self-discovery as we ascend back to ourselves through the successive stages of evolution. From the ocean, we have become a wave. And eventually then we have to merge back into the ocean again. And Pragyananda Ji kind of humorously says, the reason we've forgotten that we're not the ocean itself is because we're busy looking at the other waves. Everything is projecting out like this. And we need to turn it around and go back in. So the yogis teach there is nothing that is nothing inanimate in nature. We go from the, very beautifully, from the subtle to the gross, back to the subtle. So, from the unmanifest, the avyaktam, we come to space, then air, gas, then fire, temperature, then water, then earth. Then from the earth, the life starts to grow, from the mineral world then. This is the journey of the soul. They talk about the law of metempsychosis. It talks about the journey of the soul through 8,400,000 births from rock back to God. We have been on this journey. So, from the mineral world then, these life forces begin to expand until they outgrow the mineral world and move into the vegetable world. In the vegetable world, they speak of 3 million different types of plant incarnations that we have experienced. Moving from then. Okay, so consciousness now is starting to express itself. In the rocks, consciousness is completely asleep, unconsciousness. In the moving up into the plant world then, consciousness starts to expand. And the Yoganandaji talks about God is sleeping in the rocks, dreaming in the plants, vibrating with power in the animal realm and in human beings, has the power to transcend its own existence, to merge back into the infinite. So then, we know that we can communicate with plants. Plants know how to attract the sun. They respond when somebody loves them. They respond to love, different types of music. Apparently when certain types of blight comes, the plants can communicate. So there's a lot more going on with the plants than we think. We're not the only game in town here in creation. When you think everything is part of creation, then everything has life, is creation, is God manifesting through these different names and forms. Merging then from the plants into the animal realm, they talk about 900 waterborne incarnations, 1,100,000 earthborne incarnations, 1 million bird incarnations, 2 million animal incarnations. And we can track the evolution in the animal realm by the position of the spine. As we get, the spine becomes more and more erect, consciousness begins to express itself to higher and higher levels. In the plants, we have perception, we have movement, we have limited intelligence and memory, and most of it is generated through instinct. Then from the animal realm, we move into the human realm. And in the yogic scriptures, Adi Shankar Acharya in his Dakshinamurti speaks of this, as does Ramakrishna, says that there are three things that are extremely rare in the universe, and one of which is a human birth. It's extremely rare because in all of creation of the universe, only human beings have the capacity, through the discrimination and rationality of our highly evolved brain and spine, to discriminate between the ephemeral and the eternal, to actually be able to realize God. But it doesn't stop in the human realm. From rationality, we then move into intuition. Intuition now is the realm of yoga. That's what we're awakening through yoga. From consciousness to superconsciousness. Superconsciousness, as I interpret it, is to start to have the direct experience of the divinity in the body. And this is where Kriya Yoga comes in, because this is what we do with Kriya Yoga. The soul, the divinity in this body. This idea, as I said, Baba says, Kriya Yoga is the science of soul culture. And this culture means to cultivate. Cultivate means to go, to bring forth, to develop this fruit. In the body, the soul manifests through three what we call divine streams, divine energy, which is ultimately the Om. Divine sound, divine vibration, and divine light. And the awakening of this is super consciousness, perceiving this divine energy within the body. This continues to a higher state, cosmic consciousness, which I perceive then is from perceiving the divinity in the microcosm to experiencing it in the macrocosm. It doesn't stop there. It goes on to wisdom, Bhavik talks about, nirvikalpa stage, through which we are like, Bhavik talks about piercing the veil of nature's splendors, the three gunas, which are the characteristics of Maya, merging back into the absolute, merging back into the one, through what is called the attainment of nirvikalpa samadhi, which is when the yogic practitioner stops the heart. When you stop the heart, the heart contains the pranic energy that moves the lungs. When you move the lungs, stop the lungs, then you completely stop the movement of the mind. And through that, then, brings about this attainment of nirvikalpa samadhi, through which the spiritual experiencer, it says, through which new aspects of reality reveal themselves. New aspects of reality reveals itself. And the world appears as an ocean of light and beauty and bliss, and God is directly perceived everywhere in everything. And this is the state of realization. So when my master says, I perceive the presence of God within you, these are not my mere words. This is my direct inner experience. That's what he's talking about. He has realized that he is not just that little reflection in the bucket. He has, all of these, have these realized masters, have realized that they are light itself. But they are playing in this bucket, in this world. Why? For the sole purpose of helping us ascend back to this journey to the realization of truth. And Kriya Yoga is a proven path to the attainment of this accomplishment, having which accomplished, nothing else remains to be accomplished. This is realization. And it has been proven in the lives of these masters. Kriya Yoga is the path that is directed by, guided by the realized. In 1861, Baba talks about God brought the creation of Kriya Yoga with the creation, the mystery of Kriya Yoga with the creation of the universe. There are many yogas, but Kriya Yoga is the first yoga. He talks about what we are calling the nature of this practice, this prana kriya, this channelization of the prana, of the awakening of these triple divine qualities, is the first yoga. All other yogas are branch off this tree. It has waxed and waned for millennia, but Babaji Maharaj reintroduced it in 1861, and he wanted it to have two criteria. One, that it be made available for householders, people like us living in the modern world that have the desire, this innate desire to realize the divinity within. Because the masters teach, whether we realize it or not, this is the purpose of our life, of everyone's life. And whether we realize it or not, we are all moving towards that end. We are all on this progress, all on this procession. How many lives it takes? I mean, they talk about 400,000 lives. Try counting to 400,000. And this is how we do it. The fact, they talk about the three things being extremely rare. The first is the human birth. The second is the desire for soul culture. The desire that we feel, the inkling that we want this, that we want to realize the inherent divinity. Many people go to church, but most go as a type of business arrangement. You know, please God, I'll give you this and you give me that. You know, which is fine, it's what it is, but it's all part of this process. People that come that really want to experience the divinity which is within is very rare. Lord Krishna says it's 1 in 1,000. And of those, only 1 in 1,000 really are able to attain this nirvikalpa samadhi state and then come back to teach others. It's very profound. Baba also says that Jesus has talked about, you know, what he's teaching is Kriya Yoga. Kriya is made up of two words. Yoga, I've explained, which is the union of the awakening of the realization of the divinity in the body and then ultimately with the cosmos. And Kriya is made up of two syllables, Kri and Ya. Kri is from, is means action. It's where the kind of the root of karma comes from. Any, so that's Kri. Any activity we do, whatever it is, breathing, eating, working, eating, sleeping, whatever, is done by Ya. And what is Ya? Ya is the indwelling self, God within. So that's the essence of Kriya Yoga, is the experience, the realization of divinity through every activity. And the third of these things that are very rare, first is a human birth, the desire for soul culture. The third is the guidance of a realized master. Who are these realized masters? The yogic scriptures teach that the guru is the personification of God himself. Gu and Ru. Gu is the visible, Ru is the invisible. The invisible, the power of God, uses the visible as its instrument. Why? For our spiritual upliftment. Why? Because we've done the work through prior births to evolve spiritually to the place where we're ready now for their guidance and benefit. So with Kriya, we focus on the breath. Breath is so profound. Our life can be measured with breath. It begins with that first breath I told you about and ends with our last breath. So our life can be measured in our breaths. Breath is profound. In the yogic scriptures, it says, Namo Brahmane, Om God. Namaste Vayu, Twameva Prakyaksham Brahmasi, O breath, thou art the living, perceptible Brahman. That breath itself is God. So, we take this very seriously, that we are alive. Why? Through the breath. Baba says, to give you a taste of how important breath is and so integral to this practice, he says, through breath, God entered into all his creation through breath. Breath pervades the body with living spirit. Ever since our birth, God has been inhaling. Without the power of God, inhaling and exhaling, we are a dead body. Breath is his presence and the manifestation of his divine love. To love breath is to love God. And to love the breath is a form of continuous prayer and the true spirit of religion. Living a life of breath consciousness is the practical way to love God. Breath is profound. Breath will keep us in the present. As is the breath, so is the mind. When the mind is calm, when the breath is calm and quiet, when the breath is rhythmical, the mind is calm and quiet. Like that candle. You can see how the air is still, so the candle is still. But breath starts to get agitated, the candle get agitated. So is the mind. So, breath control is self-control. Breath mastery is self-mastery. So with Kriya, we work extensively with the breath. We awaken these triple divine qualities of divine sound, divine vibration, and divine light, and we rotate it around the spine. Plus, yogis also learn through the depth of their meditation that it would take a million years, living for a million years without disease and decrepitude by the power of chemical and solar power to develop a brain capable of expressing cosmic consciousness. In other words, to be able to attain this state of realization. Yoganandaji talked about if we had the ability, we wouldn't be able to stand it. It's like we're like, you know, activating it at the spiritual voltage of a 9-volt battery, and realization would be like plugging into 220. So if we had that, we would just fry our circuits. But through a process of magnetization, which is part of our practice, we can change our brain chemistry through which this realization is possible in one lifetime, which was proven through the lives of these masters. So we take this divine energy and we use concentrating and focusing in the chakras, these 7 energy centers in the body, 5 in the spine and 2 in the brain, rotating this energy. We're magnetizing the spine and greatly enhancing our spiritual evolution. These 7 chakras basically are kind of a microcosm of all creation. In the 7th chakra, this is the abode of the Absolute Supreme Almighty Lord in the Fontanelle. Here, in the soul center, is the center of Christ consciousness and Krishna consciousness. Yoganandaji very beautifully says, this is the abode of God the Father. This is the abode of God the Son, Christ consciousness. He says, Christ is the infinite intelligence that pervades all of creation. This infinite Christ consciousness is the only begotten Son, the only pure image of the Father reflected in all creation. And when I heard that, I went, boy, does that ever make sense? This is the Christ consciousness. This is the Krishna consciousness. When God says nobody gets to the Father but through me, he's talking about the only way to get there is through the Sushumna, the royal road. And nobody gets to the Father but through the Son. From the Christ consciousness to the Absolute consciousness. So from here then, creation begins. In the throat center, this is space, Akasha. In the heart center, this is our center of emotions. This is the air center. And we all know the fickleness of the mind and emotions. This is an interesting center because it's the midpoint. From here below, we share, this is the earth, this is the fire ceremony, fire center, where we digest the food. This is like our food center. This is the sex center, center of procreation, and this is the earth center, center of wealth, survival. This we share with our animal brothers and sisters. Shelter, procreation, food, emotions, primarily anger, fear, but love too. But with human beings, we have the ability to ascend back. Here, more discriminative in the vacuum. This is where religion really starts to talk, which is start religion, higher philosophical truth, and then the soul center, which is the cave of Brahman right here, which is really the center of our life force, is right here, and ultimately to realization. So with Kriya, we're doing this, we're rotating the spine, we're working with the breath. We have 72,000 nadi channels, they talk about, in the astral body that are somewhat correlated with the nerves and everything in the physical body. But we really focus on 3 of them, the Ida, the Pingala, and the Sushumna. They all start in the base of the spine, in the bottom center in the coccygeal, This is the Pingala on the right. This is the Ida on the left. There's the first center, second center, third center, fourth center, fifth center, sixth center, seventh center. But they're blocked. The Ida is rajasic and ends in the right nostril, stimulating the left brain. This is the Pingala. The Ida is the left side, which is lunar. This is solar. This is lunar. This is tamasic. Ends in the left brain, in the left nostril, and stimulates the right brain. With this practice, what we want to do is we separate through different techniques the Ida and the Pingala, and we open up the Shoshumna. This is the royal road, and this ends in the fontanelle. Through opening this, through practice and concentration and the grace of the masters, it's when we get to the fontanelle, and this is open, that Baba says will bring the knock that will open the floodgates of light that he's talking about, that is realization. So, with Kriya, we work with the breath, some spinal stretching exercises that also really benefit the inner organs, stimulating the endocrine system. There's also a correlation with the whole endocrine system and the chakras. The pineal gland is often associated with the fontanelle. Pituitary, the master gland, is here, is stimulated through the concentration and this divine energy. Then we have the thyroid, the parathyroid, the thymus and the adrenal glands, pancreas, liver in the second center. Then in the sex center we have the ovaries for women that stimulate estrogen and progesterone, giving health or luster and beauty to the body, and the testosterone in the men that test the which gives more virility and more health, more strength. So it promises all-round development of the body. This way, the mind, through this technique, we do some bowing techniques, which gives more blood to the brain through this long, slow, deep breathing, gives more oxygen, which is the food to the brain. So the brain itself is enriched, which helps in memory, which helps with intelligence, but also the calmness that is achieved generates better decision making. Better decision making then leads to better outcomes. Better outcomes lead to an improved life. We live in a causative universe. As we do, brings results. When we make better decisions through calmness, we get better outcomes. Plus the calmness also generates more emotional balance. I wouldn't say that we don't still get angry, we still have those samskaras, but what I have found with my anger, which is less, but what has been a huge difference, is that it dissipates much quickly. Whereas before, like, it would hang on. Now it's just, okay, I got caught. So I let it go much quicker, and I can come back to the balance much quicker. Why? Because I practiced that. And then, spiritual transformation, as I've said, that doing these certain activities and rotating this energy around the spine can greatly enhance our spiritual evolution. One technique in particular, they can say, is this Kriya Pranayama done properly. 12 breaths can create the equivalent of 1 year spiritual evolution as obtained through solar and chemical energy, through this magnetization of the sun, of the spine, plus this Kriya Pranayama, because it's our whole astral chart is also in our spine. And through another technique that we do with this, Hariharananda teaches that we mitigate the negative effects of stars and planets. So this Parabdha karma that I've talked about, karma that has to unfold, like, say, for example, if it's in your rough, just take this as a general hypothetical analogy. Suppose that you were to get in what could have been a really devastating car accident. Mitigation would mean that you would still be in a car accident, but your car might be total, but you might walk away. So it's profound. 3 minutes? Okay. So with that, I would sum up my talk. I think I've covered pretty much all the basics of Kriya Yoga. Kriya Yoga is a profound spiritual path. We've talked of many rivers. This is another river. This is another river that has proven itself through the lives of these masters. And these masters are also our river guides as we make our journey through the obstacles of spiritual life, which is very demanding and can be very difficult, but we have guides that know the way, that are here to guide us and bless us and protect us in all aspects of our lives. So to take initiation into this practice is to take initiation into discipleship into this lineage. What that means is you accept them as your guides in this practice of Kriya Yoga. Whatever other practices you have, you are welcome to have and keep. All that you would be promising to do is that what you learn in Kriya Yoga, you will keep the integrity of the practice intact. It's not good to mix and match different practices. Practices each generate different energies, have different outcomes in mind, and they're fine to do, just don't mix and match. Okay, so this is the path that is guided by the realized. It's a proven path. The three things that are very rare are a human birth, which we have, the desire for soul culture, to have a practice, a vyasa, and this is a practice where they have learned the techniques required to bring that stillness to the mind. And the third is the guidance of a realized master, are extremely rare. And this practice offers all three. So we have no time for questions. So I hope I've answered. I hope. I apologize for going a little long. So let's just end with a prayer. O God, O Masters, we humbly thank you for this rare opportunity to come together and share these teachings of this sacred path and practice of Kriya Yoga. We humbly ask for your blessing and guidance in all aspects of our lives, and we ask that you bless all beings everywhere. May all beings be happy. May all beings be noble and generous to one another. May all beings be disease-free. May there be no suffering or sorrow anywhere in the three worlds. Sarve bhavantu sukhinah. Sarve santu niramayah. Sarve bhadrani pashyantu mahakashyantu kabhagvagat. Om Purnamadaha Purnamidam Purnat Purnamadachite Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishite Om Shanti Shanti. Amen. Thank you. I would like to thank you for the opportunity to come to your beautiful store, and
thank you for blessing the space once again. We very much appreciate it.
So there's no contact? I mean, what is
okay, yes.
Yeah, so. Goodbye, that's it?
Oh, wait, there's more. One more thing. I apologize for going long. I was watching it.
You were enthusiastic.
I was. It seemed like last time I looked, it was 10 after, and I thought, oh, okay, good. And then I. Anyway, okay. Lauren will.
So, we are having a yoga initiation tomorrow, and it's a weekend program, so if you're interested, you can just let me know and I'll tell you where it is. It starts at 9:00 in the morning. It's actually at Songbird Community Center in Kapati. So from 9 to 5, and we've got like a 2-hour lunch break, and then again starts at 10:00 in the morning on Sunday, and then goes until 4:30. And initiations in the morning on Saturday, and then a nice relaxing lunch break, and then come back and learn the technique and practice. And then on Sunday, question and answer, review the technique and practice two more times on Sunday. And so the goal, besides just getting initiated and receiving that energy, is to really learn the technique and really have it down enough so you can practice on your own by the end of the weekend. And if you are interested and can't come tomorrow, you can give me your email address before you go, and I can put you on the list. We do this about once a year. And there's also other places around California where you can get an initiation as well, and the United States, or you can go to India, or Australia, or South America, or Canada. Yeah. So, and thank you, Rob.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
You're so welcome. One last thing. Just if you're the initiation ceremony, we do something, we bring dakshi. So to be initiated, we bring 5 fruits,
oh, yeah,
5 flowers, and a financial offering of $150.
Yeah.
And we'll explain what that means.
Yeah,
should you be interested.
Thank you so much. Very much appreciated. And I'll point out that we have a donation bowl over here on the counter, and we encourage you to contribute to it. We share half that with our speakers to further their work, and also retain half to maintain this space for further such events. And we're so delighted once again to have the blessing of Kriya here in Many Rivers. Thank you all for coming tonight, and we look forward to seeing you at times when the shelves are not pushed aside again. You've never seen this store.
Oh, no, that's not true. We came in here before.
Oh, that's right. We came in. That's right. We don't have these anymore in Los Angeles.
And if anybody wants to have more questions later, I'm happy to give you my card. It's my regular business card. If you have, feel like you want to email me with any questions afterwards, or look us up at kriya.org. Another one. Thank you.
That's it. You are. Kriya.org.
Kriya.org.
It's a beautiful talk. Thank you very much. I really enjoyed the talk.
So remember God in every breath.
Oh, yeah, there is. And here's a flyer. It has tiny bit more information on it for resources. So.
I'll fix another tape off this.
About the initiation.
That's too short a notice. Here's my email.
Okay. All right, great. What's your name? Steve. Good morning.
Yes.
How'd you find out about that?
Through you. You know what? It could have been through Blanco or...
Hari Harnanda was a direct disciple of Sri Yukteswar, who was Yogananda's guru. And he was also initiated in the second period by Yogananda. And Yogananda went back to India in 1935. Are you familiar with Adivarsha?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I'm a teenager.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, Yogananda went back in 1935. At that time, Sri Yukteswar instructed Hari Harnanda to go see him in Calcutta. And at that time, Yogananda gave him a...
Yeah, I
wouldn't
have
started. So he is our guru. Paramahamsa Pragyananda. He's the living, realized. Okay. Now, he carries the guru.
We should do the dinner thing sometime.
Yeah, we should do the dinner thing sometime.
It's a really good idea.
Well, reincarnated, but I mean, he has been. After his death.
seeing
I never got into the organization that was actually offering
self-realization
fellowship.
Right.
Oh, that's
another.
So you guys are
more
from.
So, Hari Harinanda.
He looks like
him.
I never knew.
Okay. So, Hari Harinanda is the last living disciple of Sri Yukteswar. So, he came to the Karar Ashram, his ashram, right after